my friend. And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there.
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, and we're here today to talk about, especially the budget has been approved in Dearborn for the next year, and that was approved Tuesday after all kinds of final public comments, emotional pleas to save the libraries, to save at least the small pools of Dearborn, and for the most part, there was a little tweaking, there was a little listening, a little changing, but basically branch libraries and small pools have been disconnected or going to be soon unusable in order to save money over this year. And taxes will be higher. So that's we'll give you all the details. We have the story, which is only available online, from the Dearborn Press and Guide, dearbornpressandguide.com, and we'll share that with you on the show right after we talk to a special guest in the studio about a very, very exciting cultural event that is hosted here at the Henry Ford Community College every summer, the One Act Play Festival. And I think I'll start with my news director, Dennis. How is it different this time than in past years, the One Act Play Festival, in terms of number of plays and how they're going to be presented and who's directing? This does start, folks, June 17th, a week from today, and goes through the 26th. We'll tell you more about that as we get through this. But
how is it different? It's different because I've never been involved before.
Okay. So I know what I'm talking about. That's why I asked the question.
Well, but that's good.
I've gone to this in the past, and sometimes the One Act Play Festival is a way to spotlight local playwrights. They might have a competition, and plays would be submitted, and they present one, two, three, and some might be one weekend and some the next. That's not going to happen this year.
No.
Also, I think even last year, they had different one-act plays in the first weekend of presentations than they did in the second.
Well, last year they did the comedies the first week, and then they had the dramas the second week. And I think there were three dramas and two comedies. And I just went to the comedies last year. Mm-hmm. And again, last year it was at the Centennial Library in the very intimate setting in the small theater there. This year, and I'm going to brag a little bit, you know that my wife is directing one of the one acts.
Yes. Well, this year it's different because the six plays or five plays are directed by five different people.
Right, that's right. And only one of them is not a student. Mm-hmm. As you know, Jerry Jablinski, we have him on this show every time something comes around. We just had him on for Romeo and Juliet. Jerry is, in fact, he is directing one of them. It is the shortest, it will be last, and is by far the most dramatic. That's called Mountain Language. My wife is directing the first. Jennifer is directing the very first play in the lineup, which is a comedy farce called The Faculty Meeting. And we can get in a little bit of that. But in the studio...
Well, I've been to many faculty meetings. Let me say they usually are comedies.
Well, are they as slapstick as you can imagine we're...
Sometimes. We don't throw pies usually, but sometimes other things.
I got to write that. Anyway, and we are joined in the studio by two of the other directors, Ramsey Kazuz, thank you. And I know Ramsey very well. He works on the paper with me as well. And then Tim Beeson, who was with Jerry when they talked about Romeo and Juliet. And he's not new to radio because you're in the radio class, aren't you?
Yep. It's nice to be back on the air.
Awesome. This is Tim is in fact directing Augustus Does His Bit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Augustus Does His Bit is about Augustus Highcastle, who is a British officer, and he's recently been moved to Little Pifflington to get it running economically smoothly, which it has been doing pretty well, basically because it shut down everything to keep up the effort for the war effort.
So it's a World War One, isn't it?
Yes.
Based on World War One.
It's set in World War One near the end, 1917, but it's a comedy because Augustus Highcastle is a very sort of foolish sort of person who, like, he's very enthusiastic about what he does, but he knows very little about what actually to do. He was captured by the Germans at one point, but they released him because they thought he was so ridiculous.
And it's I've heard it called or considered a comedy of manners.
Yes.
What does that term mean? Because that was new to me.
Basically, it's a comedy that's making fun of people's mannerisms and stuff. You have, like, a farce, which basically makes fun of just, like, ridiculous actions and slapstick sort of thing.
Sure.
And you have, but then you have the comedy of manners, which sort of make fun of the people's mannerisms, how, like, you have the stuffy people, how you have, like, compared to all the really slob people.
But I noticed that it's very dry humor. It's very very English.
Yes, very English, very dry humor. But that's a part of its charm, I think. I read through this, and it's just little things that you always pick up every time you go look through the script, and it's just, I find it hilarious.
Okay. Now, Ramsey, you're doing the three comedies as part of this festival. Of course, there's the two dramas, the one for Jerry and then the one for Mikhail Turner. He's also doing a very serious, it's called Vivian, very serious play. Jennifer's is a comedy as well as Tim's. Now, yours is as well. It's called The Actor's Nightmare. And I have to tell you, that is one of the funniest things I've seen. And that was just in rehearsal. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Actor's Nightmare, pretty much, it's Murphy's Law that it comes to life. Mm-hmm. Anything that can go wrong for an actor does go wrong. Though the lead character, he's led to believe that he's an accountant who's living out another actor's nightmare. Okay. And so he goes through, he cycles through seven plays that happen at once, it seems.
And well, to him, they're all happening at once, and
well,
he's never
him,
sure of his line.
They're all happening at once.
Sure.
To the other actors that are involved.
Okay.
They believe they are, you know, in the show that they're referencing. Like, in the beginning, it's Private Lives, and it jumps straight into Hamlet. And from Hamlet, it goes into this fusion of Endgame, Happy Days, and Waiting for Godot, which are all plays written by Samuel Beckett.
Sure.
And then it goes into For a Man of All Seasons, which is written by Robert Bolt.
Okay. Now, who wrote The Actor's Nightmare? Christopher?
Christopher Durang.
Durang. And, of course, yours was written by
George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah, yes. I've heard of him, definitely.
Yeah, if people are not familiar with theater and famous writers, I really want to commend them on the selection of one-act plays. Certainly, George Bernard Shaw, pretty big name in 19th century and early 20th
Absolutely.
Century plays from England. In fact, there is a Shaw Festival in Canada each year where that's pretty much all they do is feature many George Bernard Shaw plays, and that's a wonderful festival. That's not at at the Stratford Festival, but sometimes at Stratford they do more than Shakespeare. They might do a Shaw play there. So, but Christopher Durang is one of my favorite 20th century playwrights. Does a lot of experimental and challenging things, but fun plays too. All of these folks, rather than going in the background of each author who you may not be familiar with the names of, really they've established themselves as some of the greatest playwrights in the 19th and 20th century, and they've written really good pieces, and directed here by four students and Jerry Jablonski himself, mm-hmm. under the direction overall of Jerry. It's going to be a great, great evening. And I think it's great also because you don't have to worry about which weekend. They're going to do these same plays each day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, on the first weekend starting next Friday, and on the second Friday, the 24th, beginning that weekend. And it's just, is it 8 o'clock start time?
Just for the Friday and Saturday,
and
2 o'clock on
2 Sunday. O'clock on the Sunday shows.
So it'll be six shows, right.
And all tickets are only $6, but if you do want to reserve a seat, and we'll mention this after the interview here too, and later in the show perhaps, we've got an announcement that's going to be playing on WHFR from now every hour, couple hours. 313-845-9817. That's to reserve a ticket. Don't have to put any credit card down. Just let them know the day and the time,
yep.
That you're coming and how many. 313-845-9817. $6, that's less than most movies on the weekends. And great, exciting time. If you don't like one play, I'll bet you'll like the others.
Well, that's the thing. It's something for everybody. And they call it a roller coaster ride of comedy and drama. You know what else is interesting, Jerry?
Hello?
No, it's Jay. Anyway, what's interesting is that the audience will not be seated in the house. They'll actually be on the apron of the stage,
mm-hmm.
a much more, again, like last year, intimate setting. But
up close and personal.
Oh my! What were you saying, Ramsey?
Pretty much, we're creating this a black box theater, a proscenium black box, as Jerry calls it.
Okay.
It's going to be very similar. If you managed to catch Romeo and Juliet, very similar to that, where you had the audience up on the stage. Instead of having surrounding the entire stage, it's going to be just in front of the in front of everyone there.
And I would say some people that go to traditional plays, they sort of like to hide in the dark, big auditorium,
right.
away from the stage. And that is one kind of a valid theatrical experience. But I think when you get up close, the actors, they don't have to project as much. They can be more natural, which means the play could affect you more directly.
Absolutely.
Because you're up close, and the actors know you are, and they're relating to you. I mean, they can see your faces, and you can see theirs. And so I think it's more challenging for the actors, but it's more fun because, in a way, they know immediately the kinds of response they're getting, and they can tailor their performance to you. And it doesn't make you feel uncomfortable, folks. If you like to hide in the back of the auditorium, try this experience. It is fun. It's great. And those actors, they have to pay attention to you, and you have to pay attention to them, and you really get into the plays, and it's better for everybody involved. You know, so if you haven't experienced this sort of theatrical close seating to the actors, it is it's something you have to pay a lot of money for on Broadway, certainly, because they have to make money to pay for the house. But in this case, we're just providing the experience, so it's
$6
great.
Too. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible
for all five plays. Right?
Yeah,
each time.
Now, you guys, you've acted before. That's your main mm-hmm. thing. Is this the first time directing for both of you?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And the challenges. I'm there, so I do see a lot of them. But for you, what was the most, like, if you could pick one thing that was most challenging about the directing?
All right. Probably just getting everyone together at the same time, because I have a hard schedule right now. Half the cast that I have cannot meet on Mondays and Tuesdays, and the other half has a job where they have to come in late when everyone else can rehearse.
Yeah, and Dennis, you're you're stage manager, right?
I am. I'm the stage manager.
And that's one of the sort of logistics behind the scenes. You don't understand how hard it is to get people together, even to show up for the rehearsals.
Oh, you're exactly
right.
But
also to coordinate what has to happen, the timing during the play, too.
The very new thing about this festival, and I want to hear the challenging thing from you, Ramsey, but the thing that I noticed is that the directors share some of the actors. So some of them are learning parts for two, maybe three different roles. And have you found that to be challenging?
That's one of the most challenging things for me, because even though, you know, my actors, they've been able to, you know, get their lines, get their blocking, and, you know, get everything, you know, down, it's the fact that I have to share everybody with everybody.
Right.
That's the challenging part right there.
That is. And I know that because you share four actors with Jennifer. And it's,
yes.
And, you know, so they're splitting, as opposed to four rehearsals a week, you're really getting two.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting challenge. But 6 o'clock, I'm sorry, 6 o'clock, $6, 8 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays. And we'll definitely get, we're going to have everybody out there. It'll hold, I think they said 60 to 70 people on the apron.
Wow.
That's very intimate. And yes. When they do their curtain call, Jay, seriously, you're about three feet from the audience. It's a very, very interesting dynamic.
They open the doors probably about half an hour ahead of the start time. So about 7:30 for the 8 o'clock shows on Friday and Saturday night, and 1:30 on Sundays for the 2 o'clock show. But reservations are recommended, 313-845-9817. 9817.
And
we're going to play the spot, so you know, that is a pre-recorded announcement at the end here. And so get your pencils and papers handy.
All right, you guys, thank you so much. I know I'm looking very, very much looking forward to seeing the entire festival. Are you going to be out there too, Jay?
Oh, I'm going to try to catch this absolutely one week or another. And our guests are?
Oh, this is Ramsey Kazoos and Tim Beeson, and they're directors of the One Acts, both of them doing comedies.
And Dennis is the stage manager, so this is going to be great fun.
Yeah.
Here's the announcement, and we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal talking about that Dearborn budget that is approved and is going into effect for... after July 1.
Ford Community College proudly presents the One Act Play Festival, June 17th through the 26th. On the program are The Faculty Meeting, a comedy by Ken Jones, Vivian, a drama by Percy Granger, The Actor's Nightmare, a comedy by Christopher Durang, Augustus Does His Bit, a comedy by George Bernard Shaw, and Mountain Language, a drama by Harold Pinter. These student and faculty-directed performances will take place weekends in the Adre Auditorium of the HFCC Mackenzie Fine Arts Building on HFCC's main campus, 8 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, and 2 p.m. on Sundays, the weekends of June 17th through the 19th and June 24th through the 26th. Seating is limited. For tickets or more information, contact HFCC Technical Director Jerry Jablinski at 313-845-9892. That's 313-845-9892.
The One Act Play Festival here at Henry Ford Community College starting next Friday and going for two weekends. Hope you can get there for that. I think that's going to be a really, really fun experience. And five great famous playwrights from the 19th, 20th centuries whose short plays they've selected. And you won't be bored. And if you don't like one, I bet you'd like the other four. But I would probably like them all because they're different and great fun there. Here's the story that is only available online at this point from the Dearborn Press and Guide about the Dearborn City Council passing a budget, very controversial, cost-cutting year. And here's the story. I'm going to read it pretty much verbatim. Thank you, J. Patrick Pepper, for posting it yesterday online. And he says, residents can expect higher tax bills this summer and fewer services moving forward following City Council's approval Tuesday of an austere 2011-2012 budget. Facing a budget deficit brought on by an eroding property tax base and skyrocketing personnel costs, Dearborn City Council unanimously passed separate resolutions to increase taxes, fines, and fees, and also to adopt a budget rife with cuts that will be outwardly apparent to the public. Rife.
Rife. That means there's going to be a lot of them.
It's going to be full.
Littered with.
Full of cuts.
Yes.
Everywhere. Cuts everywhere. Overall, he says, there is $100.6 million in general fund appropriations, $95.3 million in revenues coming in that they expect, and use of about $5.3 million of city's cash reserves, because, you know, you're supposed to have a balanced budget. You can't have a deficit like the federal government, which probably shouldn't have a deficit anyway, but that's a debate going on everywhere. Right now, we've got a huge deficit, mm-hmm. and they're trying to raise the limit a little bit. I think it's $13 trillion. They need an extra $2 trillion cap, or we can't keep borrowing money, and we'll start defaulting on loan. A terrible time nationally. But cities and states have to have a balanced budget somehow. And so they're going to do it by taking, I think they only had about $10 million left in city cash reserves, and you're supposed to keep 10% of your budget available. I don't think they're going to have 10% available out of a $100 million budget. They're supposed to have $10 million. They won't have $10 million in cash.
No.
So
and they've almost admitted as much.
Yeah, every city is in that situation. Some have much less than, I think that's going to be 5% only, but it doesn't exactly say here. So let's go on. On the cut side, that's what we all want to know about, I guess, as well as the taxes. There'll be no swimming this summer at Whitmore Bowls and Hemlock Pools.
Okay.
Although that's one more pool than would have opened under Mayor Jack O'Reilly's proposal, which also had Tenite Tap for closure.
If you've
been following the papers the last couple of weeks, there's been the Save Our Small Pools people who were very vocal in a separate story that was published already last week,
mm-hmm.
Or Wednesday, about Monday night this week. They have saved the Tenite Pool for the time being. Every
year, though, this will be...
Well, depending on how the budget goes, or maybe additional funding that might be voted on, maybe in November.
Right.
We're not sure about those. Anyway, that plan was changed during budget negotiations after a council recommendation to instead close Lapeer. So it looks like instead of Tenike, they're going to close Lapeer and Whitmore Bowls and Hemlock.
Okay.
In a last-minute agreement, at least partly due to the fact that Lapeer was filled with water June 2nd.
Oh, no. Oops, somebody forgot.
But not, I don't know. I know they filled it and got ready for opening or something?
Probably.
At a $5,500 cost, council members decided to keep both Lapeer and Tenike open. Oh, I see. So that's the end of the story. So they're going to keep Lapeer and Tenike open because somebody had actually, for $5,500, got the pool all ready to go. And so they're going to keep it open.
Sure.
It would have wasted the $5,500, although, of course, it's going to cost a good deal more to keep it functioning through the summer.
Do you think that maybe that's the answer next year, right around, I don't know, May 15th, they'll all fill their pools with water?
Get your hoses out, folks, with an extension on them from your houses and start filling those pools. That won't work, but anyway. So a quote from Councilwoman Suzanne Serini, she said, "Our goal is, and it always has been, to provide reasonable recreation access for everyone in the city." And that's as the council was debating the merits of keeping both pools open, which is Lapeer and Tenite. But Bowls, Whitmore Bowls, and Hemlock are down.
Goodbye.
Okay. Also, a change from the mayor's proposal is that the pools won't open, that won't open this year will not be marketed for sale. Instead, they will be mothballed. That's a lot of mothballs.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Are they going to be leveled like they originally said?
No, they're just going to wait till next year when city officials expect to have a clearer picture of the financial outlook, primarily due to an expected millage increase ballot proposal in November.
Gotcha.
And of course, a changing factor always is home values.
Oh, absolutely.
If for some crazy reason home values go up for next year, then the city will collect more in taxes. But who knows how home values go up or down.
Right.
It depends on the sale prices, and as of this year, they're still going down.
There.
So, yeah. Also a change, they expect a millage increase ballot proposal in November. So if that passes, and we don't know if it's going to be earmarked for pools or earmarked for police fire pensions, I don't think that was agreed on here, but they expect to have some sort of proposal there. I think it's what the mayor's proposed in the past, since January, is a general 3.5 additional, just to go to the general fund, and the city council will figure out where the money needs to go most.
Can you do that when you budget? I thought they all the money had to be earmarked, but you can, I guess, put it into a general fund.
Whatever the voters pass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, so we know that there already will be, they went to the highest amount that they could by law with the millage, correct?
Okay, jumping on down.
Sorry. And then they're going to have
it on the
ballot again.
Yeah. Yeah, on the revenue side, council, and we expected this, raised the city's operating millage, chief funding source for day-to-day municipal operations, from 13.62 mils to 15 mils. So approximately 1.5 mil addition. The city legally could do that, according to state law. They were not asking the full amount in past years, but they really need the money now, so they just did it, okay. But that's not enough to survive the next 2 years, and maybe not even the rest of this year. So they know that that tax increase will generate about another $5 million in additional revenue. They're counting on that in their budget projection. But that's not going to save the pools or some of the libraries, which we'll talk about, too. The average Dearborn house has a taxable property value of about $58,500. So you figure out, folks, what your tax bill said for your house. Okay, it's a lot less than last year because those values are still going down. And remember, the taxable value is supposedly half than the market value.
Okay.
Which is also a shock to anybody trying to sell their house. But usually I find if the house is in good condition, you can get more than double your tax value, whatever that is,
right,
to sell the house. But these are averages, folks. So for that property value of $58,500, that would be a house that might sell for about $110,000, $120,000.
Right.
The additional amount will be $81 annually to the $800 that would have been owed under the 13.62 mil levy.
So it's an extra $81 a year.
Yeah.
On average. For that,
for a house that has the taxable property value, half market value, of about $59,000.
Which is the average in the city. Okay, right. Gotcha.
That's average in the city. So $81 more a year for people at that price. If you've got a $200,000 house, then probably that you could sell for $200,000, you think, it'll be $160
right,
more because of what the city just did. But that won't be enough, folks. That's
why in November we'll see.
That's why November they'll figure out what they're asking for, and the mayor has said another 3.5. Well, 3.5 is about double the 1.38.
Actually, more than double.
Two and a half times more. So that would be maybe another $200, if passed, for the $59,000 taxable value house.
But that brings in about, I don't know, 15 to 20 million. Instead of the five.
And they will need that, or they will start cutting even more because of the two costs. Remember, as we've said on this show many, many times, is the pension reserve, the money that has to go into pensions for police and fire, and I think for some other government workers, too, in the city.
Right.
Keeps going up, 20% increase a year. And then health care cost, health insurance for those people currently working for the city, including police and fire. And they keep going up like 20% a year. So those two costs, the city has no control over that. The actuarials who control legally the amount of money going into pension funds, they say this is how much you're going to need to put in to keep those funds viable, and that's what they got to do.
Now, I feel like I should know this, so if just don't laugh at me if there's an easy answer here, but I don't remember hearing, was there a resolution to the money that's owed by, is it Burton Katzman? We're owed a big chunk of money that we had to decide how we were going to get it or when.
There's been no announcement of a resolution to the West Dearborn developer lawsuits that the city has filed.
They basically said you won, but now we have to figure out how much and how you're going to collect.
Yeah, they were in some kinds of negotiation with Burton Katzman, of course, because they could keep it in the courts for years.
Like a settlement
to
of
maybe,
some kind, right?
Well, that's what the city was hoping for. Just write us a check for $10 million. We'll settle for that at this point. It's for things they didn't do that they were contractually obligated to do in terms of West Dearborn development about 10 years ago.
Right, and that was my thing. It goes back pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the agreement was, and you know, and the city did win in court, but Burton Katzman probably doesn't have the money. I don't know if they do or not. So maybe they'd give us some money, or maybe they would develop something they said they were going to develop.
It has to do with those parking structures too, didn't it?
Well, the structures are there.
Right.
And the city is paying for them.
Right.
So that's a done deal. There's nothing. No, it's like they were supposed to put up some things between the parking structures.
In addition to the parking, that's what I mean. It was around
apartments,
that same time.
Hotels, right. Something like that. And they decided not to do that.
Because it wasn't viable.
Well, that's what they thought. But they were obligated to do it under contract. And so they have to do something now to make up for what they didn't do. But, you know, a big corporation, they have their big lawyers, they can appeal, even if they lose at one level, the first level where they've lost, and they can hold it up for years and then go out of business or bankrupt, which we thought they were, but they've proven they do exist. Some sort of corporate entity exist.
Yeah, they were playing the shell game.
But eventually they can go out of business.
Sure.
They can just dissolve and you can't get any money from them.
Right.
That's happened, I'm sorry to say, a couple times at the college here over the 40 years I've been around that... I remember some electricians did work initially on the Fine Arts Building when it first went in and was completed in 81. We didn't discover until later that they didn't do the ground wires. Everybody knows that electrical outlets for like the last 50 years, you need three-prong plugs and sockets. And one of those little prongs and parts of the hole in the socket are connected to a ground system to prevent against shocks and, you know, fires that might be generated by an ungrounded plug. And certainly in schools, public buildings, it's been the grounded requirement has been there for years and years to save lives.
Sure.
And the city is now demanding it in all buildings in Dearborn that are new, certainly.
Right.
Well, guess what? We discovered when we tried to upgrade the system that they hadn't connected the third wire. Why? Because it takes some time to connect three wires. It takes them 50% more time than only connecting two wires.
Right.
And who's going to notice? It's in the walls.
Well,
it's behind the it's behind the panels. We didn't notice for 8 years.
Wow.
So we turned around and tried to find the company to have them do it, or we're going to sue them. They're out of business.
Right.
They dissolved. They had a corporate entity, short term, as it turned out, that dissolved. Nothing. Couldn't do anything about it. They're gone. Poof. There's no liability, no money we could get. So the next contract to increase electricity for a fine arts building, needing computers and stuff that all colleges need, they had to pay the money again to have the system totally grounded as well as the new additional sockets and plugs.
And obviously they researched the second company better. Well, hopefully anyway, right?
In fact, I found in my house when I did a big upgrade in the 90s, they put in new three-prong sockets, and I'm trying to plug in surge protectors and that are going off. The lights are flashing. There's no ground. So they didn't connect the ground. And that company is out of business, too, that I dealt with as a contractor. So
there's a pattern here.
Yeah, there's a pattern
they
here.
They don't do their job there.
It's certainly a problem in business when you deal with somebody. You know, buyer beware, because if that company goes out of business, even a day after they've done the job, there's nobody left to sue.
That's right.
There's nobody around legally to go after. So the city's got to do something before whatever is left of Burton Katzman goes out of business. But I bet they're thinking about that.
Well, they said that getting the money, being owed the money and collecting are two different issues, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's other cuts here we need to mention, and people are on the edge of their seat.
sit back. Yeah. It's okay.
The cuts it went through as initially proposed include the elimination of the Dearborn Health Department. So you cannot go and get your shots easily, quickly at the Dearborn Centennial Library because the health department will be gone. And, I don't know, July 1st or something. So you'll have to go to Wayne County or your local doctor or your local hospital, but you can't get any of those health services locally or quickly. They're taking away that service. And they're closing Snow Library. Now, guess what?
What?
Looks like they're not going to close Esper.
Or Bryant, right?
Or Bryant.
Good.
Right. And Esper, I was going to feature that today, and I think it might have been one of the turning points. There was a brilliant editorial wrote by a woman whose name is Niam Zalala, Zalzala, and it was called We Want Dessert, Save Esper Library.
That's funny.
And brilliantly written. It's in the Times Herald this last Wednesday, 6/8/11. I don't want to share it with you because I guess she made her case. Whether it was that or other protest, Glenn O'Cray, who we talked to on our show last Friday, he did go Monday night, and according to the Press and Guide on Wednesday, he did show up and make his appeal, his plea, that we heard on the air. It's part of our podcast that people can listen to from last Friday.
It was wonderful.
That is June 3rd, the journal show for June 3rd, last week Friday. You can listen to and you can hear what Glenn's arguments were. And of course, Bryant was, he made an argument for all the branch libraries.
Right.
But I remember him especially making an argument for Esper. And, of course, the Bryant Library, which has the Chamber of Commerce. So they couldn't close. That would have been the last to close, because what are you going to do with the Chamber? As the Chamber representative last Friday on this show, Peggy Richards said, well, there's talk that maybe we'll go to the, if they have to close Bryant, and everybody hopes, at least myself and the other library supporters, hope they don't have to close Bryant ever,
right.
Then the Chamber has to go somewhere. And then they said, it might go to the new train station, you know, the hub of transportation,
yeah.
Intermodal train station, not just trains,
nope.
But all kinds of stuff will come together there, hopefully not in an accident way.
They'll
have the traffic routed appropriately and signs up.
There
and
may
so
never
on,
be high-speed rail, so I wouldn't worry about
but
it.
But that will be a large facility, that new train station center, and they could theoretically get, I guess, the Chamber there. And that's West Dearborn, sort of, but it's kind of the east side of West Dearborn.
Now, did you go inside? Did you get a chance last week to go inside? Okay.
No, I didn't.
Beautiful. What they've done is it's
oh,
cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see why they did not want to leave. It's ideal space and a great location.
I think the city ponied up a good amount of money, and the Chamber maybe contributed somewhat to some really nice facilities, small meeting rooms to talk to business people and office space. I must have 7 or 8 desks for all the people. I know there's 3 paid people, Peggy Richards, Jennifer Gehring, and someone else.
Right.
But they have other volunteers that are in there all the time helping their cause for a welcome center for the city, for tourists and drop-in people in West Dearborn, but also for business people to coordinate marketing campaigns, advertising, special events, and so on. So wonderful small facility as part of the Bryant.
Well, if they need quiet, it's perfect. It's the library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
some things were saved, folks, and that's usually the way it is with politics. You
give and take?
Yeah, you talk about the worst case scenario, and then you almost always know that you'll be too harshly criticized or kicked out of office if you make it all come true right away. So they backed off, they compromised.
Unless you're Schneider, right?
Yeah, all right. Well, no, even in the legislature, with all the bills that have been passed against seniors' pensions and senior health care and the schools and current teachers and their tenure status and so on, there were compromises made, but just say, well, we didn't do all the terrible things we said, but I'd say 90% of the terrible things for the seniors, for the teachers, for government employees.
Right.
Almost everything was passed exactly the way Snyder wanted. If they say, well, we compromised. No, they didn't.
Not really.
They compromised just a smidgen.
We're Wisconsin light. That's
everybody
what we are.
Is still who I mentioned. All those jobs, all those people are hurt tremendously, and there'll be fewer of them because of these proposals. And fewer seniors staying in Michigan. A few seniors I talked to, they're already planning because of what happened to the pension tax to move to Florida, to move to
Arizona,
New Hampshire
or whatever. Sure.
Texas so far does not have pension tax, but they're in $18 billion deficit situation, so I think that may change, that they may have to start taxing somebody. Of course, nobody suggested taxing the rich. No. Shared sacrifice, except not if you're rich.
Right.
No, you need all your money to stay rich, and you need more money to get richer. Why should you pay more for the vital, essential services that keep the whole state going? Give me a break. Okay, that was satire, folks. I mean, that's just not believable to yours truly. Remember, all the opinions on the Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, just myself, Dennis, and anyone else talking. Just here to challenge you, though. Think about it. Shared sacrifice, where is it? Okay, you know, businesses in Michigan had a crazy tax code.
Right.
Okay, it was about 6, depending on the business, 6.75% of their income, but it varied depending on the size of your business. But it was hard for anybody to calculate and figure out. Mm-hmm. Even the businesses were going bananas.
Right.
And somebody who'd want to maybe move a business into Michigan were just so confused. Well, would we have to pay that or not? Well, it depends. Well, that's no way. So they reduced the business tax overall from like 6 and depending how you compute it, 6.75 to a flat 6%. Easy to calculate.
Sure.
So businesses, they didn't have to sacrifice anything. They're getting an easier break. Most every business has got a cut in their taxes now in Michigan But it's not too much of a cut.
No, but you've always viewed that, if I'm correct here, you've always viewed that as nice incentive for, I mean, other businesses would like to move in here because of that.
Yeah, Michigan, despite the fact that Suzanne Serini said the Michigan business tax was so
one of
terrible,
the worst, yeah.
And by the way, I saw our friends, the conservative think tank Mackinac Center, they said we were 48th. There's part of the Michigan business tax that does look really bad, but if you look at all the taxes for business, as well as the taxes for people, we're right in the middle.
Sure.
So Michigan is not that bad a state, never was, not the worst, not the best. So nothing wrong with having a little more incentive for business. And I love the simplicity aspect. I think we need it in all tax systems. Do away with exemptions and special loopholes.
Sure.
That make it confusing, either for individuals or for businesses. Let's find out exactly what it costs. Let's make everybody pay their fair share. I am still in favor of certain incentives for limited time for very wise energy, new energy initiatives, okay? Because that'll save us so much in the long run. So I do think government can give a little nudge here and there for industries in general that need to get started up. And, of course, we missed out on the film industry and the TV video industry. That's dead now, thanks to the Snyder proposals. And I don't, short term, I think some of us know how much we've lost, but they don't care. But I think there should be some incentives. You've got to be very careful with government where to do that. Otherwise, let's simplify the tax code for businesses. Let's simplify it. We talked about the Michigan Fair Tax for individuals instead of income tax for individuals,
right.
Consumption tax. And, there's ways to do it better. And so I agree with making it simpler, maybe reducing it a little bit, which is what they did with the business tax. But what about the rich? Nothing. Not a single extra penny the rich have to pay in taxes. No shared sacrifice there at all. And rich, what do we mean by rich? Well, multimillionaires, but even people that make more than $100,000. Not an additional penny are they getting asked for from their sizable incomes to help the state of Michigan and the teachers and the government employees that we do need. There's really bad things happening. Of course, the worst, as long as I mentioned bad things happening, the emergency financial managers. This is tyranny within a democracy that should not happen. This takes away all initiative from local governments, from state governments, from county governments, if the governor just wants to. Don't even have to pass a resolution. Right. In the legislature. Legislature just gave this fiat power to do whatever the heck he wants to do to the governor because he's such a good guy and we can trust him. That's what they said about Hitler. That's what they said when they elected Hitler in 1930 to a democratic parliament. By 1932, said, oh, he's such a good guy. We'll just give him absolute power. In effect, make him, chancellor for life.
Right.
If he wants to stay.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you stay if you got all the power?
Sure.
And then he just dissolved the parliament finally because what the hell? Why do we need somebody talking about if you can do anything you want to do, why do we need them? So this is, hey, come on, Republicans. Come on, Tea Party people. We are the laughingstock of the country in this encroaching tyranny. You talk about socialism. I'm talking about dictatorship, okay? Socialism still allows input from the people.
Sure.
Look at socialism in Sweden. And, the people can still vote. They can elect people. But they like government-run things.
But it's looking pretty good right now comparatively, isn't it?
But right-wing, come on, Republican right-wingers, that's a dictatorship. That's when there's no input from the people. And that's what, in terms of emergency financial managers for either, you say, well, that's just for the schools. No, it's for the cities, like Benton Harbor.
Right.
And, no necessary limit. They do away with any of the power of the mayor, of the city council, of anybody else elected or appointed, and do whatever the heck they want to do. And what are they doing? Well, of course, they're doing away with any sort of input from employees, doing away with union contracts right and left, firing anybody they want to. It's for the good of all. Is it really, in the long run, to fire all these people that we desperately need? Is it really reducing cost in a good way? It's going to be chaos. folks. I'm exaggerating. I'm sounding like Glenn Beck there. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone that far. But in these cities, in what's going to be left of Detroit, because of emergency financial manager there and for the schools,
right?
It's not emergency financial manager for the city yet, but that's constantly threatened. It's just going to be a disaster. It is the wrong way to go. It's a democracy, folks. Fight for the right to vote and have your say. We did this in Dearborn with the budget, and it had some impact.
Sure.
Nobody can handle the cost. Some of these costs have nothing to do with the city.
No,
but the city's got to cut back.
You're talking about the pools and everything. Yeah. If you'd have told, when I spoke to Kristen Taylor, unfortunately she couldn't be on the show last week because of her schedule. But when I talked to her, I know that if you'd have told her ahead of time that this would have been the outcome, I think that she would have been very happy. Because they were expecting a lot worse.
They did have a big showing of support, Mark Lane and others. Was the major presentation, at the board meeting on Monday.
So, and it made a difference.
A council meeting on Monday, yes.
I certainly believe it made a difference.
Maybe they already knew, the council knew they were going to compromise.
Sure.
All of their protests, all the editorials, like that wonderful one to save the Esper Library,
right.
Glenn O'Cray's presentation, who knows exactly what it was, but all together it made a difference.
Sure.
A worst case scenario didn't happen, although a good politician like the mayor, they knew that they weren't going to go all the way with any of this stuff.
No, because they need
those. So that they could seem like they were responding to the public outcries. But of course, if there was no public outcries, well, what the hell? Let's just go ahead.
No, and I think you're right. I think there was a strategy because, I think they saw by the turnout for some of these things that, hey, this is a pretty big number of our voters that are coming out. So yeah, that was it was a political move in a lot of ways.
A good small percentage can have a tremendous effect. You don't need the majority showing up.
No, you're right.
No, not at all.
You're right.
Well, I've seen many times on school board meetings, one person stands up and goes into a very emotional attack, harangue, complaint.
Did you ever do that?
And all of a sudden, the school, not me, but I've seen it.
It's contagious.
The school board all of a sudden figure out a motion and they pass it and things change. One person standing up making somewhat intelligent and somewhat respectful, emotional plea.
Sure.
And it usually takes more than one for the city council to get their attention. But thank you for all the people. Democracy in action. If we ever get stuck with an emergency financial manager for the schools or the city. And by the way, this is the other thing about the emergency financial managers for schools or the cities of Michigan now, that your legislature approved, your Republican-dominated legislature with a Republican governor approved of this. They wanted it. Democrats never proposed it. Never, ever, ever suggested this. We had an emergency financial manager under Granholm, but they didn't have those powers. They didn't have these dictatorial powers.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Having an emergency financial manager, it makes a lot of sense in most cases.
The Republicans and Snyder changed it so they're just totally powerful to do anything they want to do.
That's too much power.
And
unilaterally.
They can, the government, that is Snyder, can send them in whenever he wants to. They don't even have to be broke.
Right.
They don't even have to be bankrupt for, either by one day or for a year or two. There's not even they can go in before anything happens. So they could come into the city of Dearborn anytime they wanted to and just take it over. Well, that doesn't seem right to me, folks, in a democracy.
To Snyder, right?
The answer. Right. Directly back to the governor.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So that is terrible. It's we're one of the worst states in the country for that kind of tyranny.
Absolutely.
To come in. You say, well, it's just limited, and it's only those cities that really need it. How do you know? That's what the Jews said in Germany. Oh, they wouldn't take my family to the gas chambers, to concentration camps. And then, of course, 6 million were rounded up because they couldn't believe the government would really take away their rights and think they were terrible people and start killing them for no reason. Again, we got that with the Patriot Act, folks. We have that situation. There's already been the excesses under that, and our government is still renewing it because they're too chicken to seem like they're soft on terror. It keeps your blood flowing in your body.
I was going to ask you how you feel about
that. You keep following politics, folks, closely, and you will stay energized.
Yeah.
Like that little bunny.
You have no choice.
But you don't need batteries.
Well, it's hard to keep up with all these things.
But you don't want to become apathetic. You don't want to just give up. Well, I can't do anything about it. I mean, you're listening to the show now, maybe not many of you, but if you're still listening, it's because once you understand the issues, there are things you can do.
Sure.
And you can make it make a difference. You can change things, even against a big, rich government. I'm still waiting, though, speaking of rich, final comment here, for the rich to pay their fair share, to pay something additional. And so in the vote in the fall, it's usually frequently the rich that vote, not the poor.
Sure.
So for the millage proposal in November, if you've got more than $100,000 in income, I hope you'll go and vote in favor of doing it, of paying that additional money. You know, more money because you got a bigger house than the poor person. You'll want to do it. It's shared sacrifice, folks. That's where that millage is going to come from, is the richer people will pay a lot more in terms of their property tax. So do it. Please do it. Show me that you care about your city. Support that millage, whatever the heck it is.
And you know what? Congratulations on a nice income. That is not something that's – you're not saying it's negative, Jay. You're just saying that you have a great opportunity here to help people. And I think that's – having a lot of money can be a responsibility, you know?
The teachers' incomes, and teachers are not making that much. Oh, they're making more than – no, come on. It's basically a job that keeps you above poverty level. It was relatively secure until everything this passed this week. I won't go into that detail, but I can in the future. Health care was cut. Pensions are cut. Government workers are cut. More layoffs in the schools because of the emergency financial managers. Where's health care for the poor? Anybody thinking of doing anything to provide health care for the people that can't afford it? No. Anybody doing anything to control health care costs for the people that especially can't afford it? No. There's no initiatives in that in Michigan. Obamacare won't kick in for 2 years, unfortunately.
Right.
And that would really help. But there's still going to be 20 million people totally uninsured, even when that happens. And that plan, which was second best plan. I mean, the best plan, as we've said here, as we have guests on the show from everywhere, we have Howard Dean, we have any expert you can think of. How do you control healthcare costs? It has to be universal single payer, like Canada, like France, like Germany, like England. The best of those systems, we need it. It's the only way to control the cost. You say, well, fair market, capitalism, free market. No, it won't. It has been proven it won't control costs. They're going to keep going up. Mayor O'Reilly said, somebody's got to do something about healthcare costs.
Right.
I mean, it's just one of the two major problems. But if city can't control it. State could, as we know from Dearborn Heights, the current treasurer, Andy Dillon, he had a proposal. It was only for government employees and police and fire. But it would have mandated lower costs for health care. And the mayor was, I don't think our mayor is a socialist, but he was saying, I just hope something will get like that will give you approved because it'll hold the cost down.
And that's what it was all about.
But it'll still continue because it's a statewide plan and more people are insured. It'll keep the benefits fairly good. Okay, a couple, apparently, or the proposal that Dillon made, a couple of police and fire departments have really good health care.
Okay.
And it would hurt them. But on the whole, it would keep benefits at the current level, but hold down those costs that are killing our city's budgets. And but Dillon's plan, well, they made him treasurer, but it's nowhere.
No.
Nobody's no Republican has been has introduced anything like that, because that would be socialism. Ooh. Well, we need socialism, folks. I'm not talking about dictatorship. I'm not talking about communism. Look it up. There's so many people who use that word wrong, I use the word right, tyranny, dictatorship. I'm using that in the correct political science way. Look it up. That's what's happening with emergency financial managers, okay? And with the governor appointing them however he wants to, whenever he wants to. That's tyranny. That's small t tyranny. And it's not democratic. And it's not the way we should be doing things. Well, but it's an emergency. Well, isn't everything an emergency?
Yeah.
Clean water is an emergency. Our climate is an emergency. The winters are colder, the summers are hotter, the storms are more violent. That's climate change, folks. That's not a cycle. That's not a cycle of how it used to be. Look at the numbers. The scientists have got the numbers. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, that's the thing, is people have buried their heads in the sand for so long that it has become an emergency on so many levels. If you keep putting it off, what's going to happen? It'll be due one day, right?
Right. Okay, come. I want to finish up the story. I know we went on, but this is the big story of the week, folks. Yeah. The budget of Dearborn with the cuts, and we still have about 8 minutes on the journal here, so I'll continue with the story here. Council also voted to overhaul the rate structure for the city's paid parking system in downtown West Dearborn.
Right.
Not East Dearborn.
Well, is there paid parking in East Dearborn? No.
Maybe not. No. Metered spots will now run 75 cents an hour instead of 50 cents an hour.
Wow.
50% jump. although I thought 50 cents was such a token small amount. Didn't doesn't pay to have somebody sitting in the booth, you know?
No.
I mean, if you got a guarded parking structure, you've got a guard there in the lot, at least 75 cents in those things. Now, if it's just metered and there's nobody around watching your car, I think that should be a little less.
Like a quarter costly. A quarter, a half hour? Yeah. So it's 50 cents
quarter,
an
half hour.
Hour,
50 cents an hour. Yeah, fine. But even late night in West Dearborn for the party goers at the clubs, and that's 50 cents an hour.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I go to the farmer's market, and that is it.
I'd rather pay one-time fee from an, but you need an attendant for that. Like,
yeah.
I want to go and party all night here, and I'll pay the $3 or the $5. Heck, but you can do that at the parking structure.
Exactly.
But that's too far away from some of the West Dearborn places to do that. So
I don't know. I haven't done that in a long time, but I think a lot of it's close together.
That extra 25 cents an hour is going to raise $500,000, they expect.
That's awesome.
If anybody parks
there for that. Yeah. That extra 25 cents may deter people, though, huh?
Yeah. Well, we don't know. Or East Dearborn will get more business.
Yeah,
or Warren Avenue will get more business.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of free parking around there. Despite all those cuts, also there will be a 10% across-the-board rate and fee hike for various a la carte city services such as birth certificates, inspections, and the like.
A la carte. Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that term.
I had to have my plumbing. I just replaced a sink last fall. Everybody in Dearborn has a story about the what used to be called the Building and Safety Department.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's separate. Is safety separate from building? Whatever it is.
I don't know.
They split it up. But these inspectors, they come out. They look at it, they glance at it, and usually I name drop the contractor, like a distinguished, well-known, long-lived plumber. Did this. Oh, yeah, they're great. I said, do you want to look under the sink? Do you want me to take the bottles? Oh, I don't need to. He's great. They're a great company, you know. Okay, and then not once but twice they come to the house. 3 months later, you're going to go, well, we're gonna invalidate your permit. You're going to get a big fine here. Nobody inspected. I said, look, Gary came out. We don't know Gary. Well, how did he come out and show credentials in November? And they're just, now maybe it's not as corrupt. There haven't been any FBI investigations.
No, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, since they reorganized the place. But get your act together, City of Dearborn. And apparently most cities do not need a permit when you're changing your sink. Because it's a simple connection. Okay, the incinerator has to be, garbage disposal has to be connected properly or you get a lot of problem gases.
Sure.
And I know that, but most of the cities don't even inspect for that. Now, is that an advantage in Dearborn is that just another $75, $80 cost?
But they've always looked at it as, they're keeping things under scrutiny to make sure it's done right. I mean, and what happened in the city's defense, at least with the economic turn, they had so many houses that became available due to foreclosures, mm-hmm. and they had to keep on the ball. And they didn't want blight.
Well, and they're still empty.
They're still empty, sure.
So that's another issue. So, but I don't begrudge 10%, I guess.
No.
What the heck. Still significant questions. What about that millage you mentioned? Will it be as much as 3.5 mils we'll have to vote on in November? What would it be used for? Be earmarked or not? All these questions were alluded to at the meeting last Tuesday, 4 days ago, 3 days ago, but city officials had no immediate answers. They say, we'll address the millage tonight, but it's not part of this budget.
I think that they felt they had their hands full just with the specific events.
And in fact, that question is a visibly that comment will address the millage, but it's not part of the budget. Was from a visibly annoyed O'Reilly.
Mayor,
in response to a resident's question on the millage talk. In order for the millage to make it on the November budget, the administration needs to formulate the proposed language, and City Council needs to approve it before the July 8th deadline for submission to the state. So we'll know by July 8th. So they said, well, we're going to postpone it, not tonight. Well, I can't postpone it longer, about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks to go, and we'll have the word on what they're going to do about the millage for November. Much of the year's deficit was closed using one-time measures. Largest component is the speculative $6 million in revenue from the sale of Dearborn Towers. The mayor said in late May that the city is negotiating with two potential buyers, and he hopes everything will be finalized by June 30. But if it isn't, there's $6 million short for next year's budget.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way.
Yeah, right. Well, that just means that millage is more certain in November, more necessary, and might even be more than 3.5 if they can't sell the towers there.
Or parking will be a buck an hour then.
Mm-hmm.
Well. Ooh, don't say that. Uh-huh. Wow.
Here's the fund balance thing. They did further deplete the money. It's going to be fully exhausted by 2014, which is not a good thing. You'll have no rainy day reserve of 10%.
I have to tell you, though,
the city won't be able to borrow money or get bonds if it has no cash reserve.
But that's later than I thought.
No, the mayor has said this. I mean, the millage, he thinks, is essential, so we keep a cash reserve.
Gotcha. All right.
But they still have a little bit left.
That's right. They were worried about the 10%.
I said they had $10 million now. Right now, they say, June 2010, they had $21 million. Current year budget expected to use 3.9 of that. So going into next year, 17.3. So they're going to take about $6 million off the 17. So we'll still have about 10%, about $10 million for next year, during next year. So we will have the 10%. What we said at the beginning was incorrect. We will have the full 10% we need that is recommended for a rainy day fund of cash. But That'll be gone in the next 2 years if we don't pass another millage.
Now, with the millage going up on the ballot in November, we vote on a specific amount millage, or can it be up to the full that they're asking? I don't know if I asked the question properly.
Well, at one point the mayor said, and we've got 2 minutes left, but at one point the mayor said we might ask for a millage that would go away. It'd only be a 2 year. Extra millage.
Right, for that budget.
That would have a sunset clause or whatever, that we'll only need this for 2 more years, and if home values go up, then we won't need it, and it'll automatically go away. We don't even have to vote it out.
Good.
Always with millages, the city always has put in language that if they don't need it all, they won't take it all.
Okay, that was my question. Can the public, though, vote on, we don't want to give you the full 3.5, so we'll give you, two?
No, it's however it's phrased on the ballot.
Gotcha.
You know, all right. You won't have...
up to.
Do you? Yes or no? And if yes, do you want 3.5, 2.5, 1.5, or 0.5?
Right.
No, you don't have those multiple choices.
You don't have
choices.
Vague terms.
You don't have multiple choices. No. Okay. It's you vote, but the issue is not only the sunset clause and the basic amount of it, but will it be earmarked? And as we talked about this show, and I've heard nobody else mention this, it's possible to have several earmarked millage increases.
Sure.
Like Dearborn Heights has a millage that's earmarked for their libraries. And that's it.
And they can vote on that, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. See, now that's where I was headed with this. That makes a lot of sense to me. If you're going to earmark it, let the public specifically vote no.
And in Dearborn Heights, their pension money comes from a millage that they passed for police and fire pensions that automatically goes up however much is needed. And the people at Dearborn Heights, God bless them, said, we want that.
For the police and fire. Wouldn't it have been interesting if one of the millage was earmarked, part of the portion of the money was earmarked for the pools? I wonder if would have had the same kind of a...
It's such a small amount that you wonder if you really want to earmark pools. I mean, earmarking libraries, point. I think that's important.
That's
earmarking maybe pension plans is a good idea. The city's off the hot spot, for a pension plan that automatically goes up because the voters voted for it. We'll cover that no matter what. And so in Dearborn Heights, it went up something like 2 mils, 3 mils.
Right, right.
And the city council reviewed it, but they had to go along with it because that's what it said. The people said, whatever it takes, we want to make sure that's paid.
Mm-hmm.
Don't cut the future away from our police and fire in terms of retirement monies. And that's wonderful. God bless you, people at Dearborn Heights, for passing that. But maybe other things. But you can't have a millage earmarked for
everything.
Single.
It just
office,
doesn't make sense. And the people that I talk to in Dearborn, a lot of them have the feeling I don't want to pay for somebody else's bad decision, which could go back a number of years. Anyway. We're getting ready to start another show.
Yes. Highway 61. This is WHFR Dearborn. The podcast will be cutting off shortly. Hope you were able to listen to this over the air. They're doing some electrical work today, but our electricians may not get here because the major company is one of dozens trying to get Detroit electricity back
That's
up
right.
and running.
I saw that.
And so we may have some electrical problems tomorrow here at HFCC in terms of broadcasting, but it's all scheduled stuff, and it won't be more than a couple of hours. Luckily,